Officially completely screwed. Got slept all day. Got stuck at the airport all night long and kind of had a weird time just hanging out at the airport. just kind of wait for some folks to trickle in a little bit here.
Yo.
Hey, guys, how are you?
What's up, everyone?
What you been up to? You doing some dip buying yet?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I've been dipping my toes. I think it's pretty healthy that Bitcoin is doing what it's doing. I don't think anything sustainable is going to just go up like vertically and offer no retracements as like BTC had been doing basically.
So I personally am anticipating a bit of a small retracement into like 50 to 53K range, but I think it needs that before it can do the 100K. So that's where I'm leaning towards to personally.
55 is the 50-day moving average, and 40K is the 200-day moving average. So that gives you some idea.
Yeah, for sure. I think 50 to 53K is like super healthy, and it's just so crazy seeing how like people are just being so extremely euphoric. And like when you, I've mentioned it to some people, like it's probably going to do this. And they're all like, I started mentioning this 2 days ago and everyone was like, you're fucking crazy. You're a bear. Like
just, I don't think yeah. People are too euphoric. I don't think so. Like, remember the ETF inflows are very, very high, like record setting inflows, more than any ETF in history. So I don't think it's inappropriate euphoria necessarily.
For sure.
That's why I'm curious to see on Monday what happens, because if we still get strong inflows.
So last weekend, what happened was you had this kind of break of high, and then ETF buyers bought high essentially on Monday. I'm curious if coming into this weekend, the same exact thing happens, where you know these pullbacks happen after market close. It eliminates the possibility for the ETF participants to get their foot in the door, and then you pump it by the Monday and then they get to hit buy high. Is this very dissimilar to the I'm pulling up like the 2020 high break, and there's like 1, 2, 3, like 4 weekly candles before takeoff. And right now we're only in the second weekly candle in the all-time high break area. So chop in this area is pretty normal. Like, I don't even think we have to necessarily drop down to, you know, the longer moving averages, but chop here is normal for a few weeks.
Yeah, I think sideways action or a little bit of a move down is super healthy. And I think that's just like, people shouldn't be panicking about that. And I'm definitely with you on the Doge chart actually looks pretty fucking good. So I bought some of that, and I definitely think it can. I don't know why.
Yeah, I added plenty of it today too. Like,
yeah.
It's right. It's at a fib level on the log chart at 14 cents or whatever. But yeah. The way I'm looking at it is like this, like as you break high, the euphoria of that leads to more and more people holding spaces, you know, Bitcoiners talking to their friends, et cetera, et cetera. And then people start just sort of going, okay, crypto's about to take off. And the Google Trends data for both things like Doge, things like Chainlink, et cetera, like the search hits are definitely trending upwards. And when you search for Chainlink, you're probably looking for the coin. If you search for Doge, you're probably looking for the coin. It's not like a false signal. And those signals are starting to just perk up now. And it's good we have a bit of a dip, because weekend buyers, newbies are usually, like a lot of times they're going to play on the weekends when they have some time on their hands. And the good thing is they're able to get in at on these pullbacks. And, you know, because the newbies are basically buying small bags. You know, they might buy $100 here or $100 there. And the good thing is those bags are bags that they don't mind just holding till like the whole bull run. If you have a gigantic bag and, you know, you go up 2x, you know, your $1 million turns into 2 million, you might be like, ooh, I made good enough money here, I'm out. The small bag holder, like, you know, $100 bag, they don't give a fuck. They're going to hold that thing till Valhalla, essentially. They're like, okay, if it's not $1,000 yet, well, I'm going to leave it alone, you know? So I think it's good to get a lot of little microscopic new buyers. And the Doge chart really clearly reflects that, because, like, the market cap of Doge back in the four last bull run was really small. And now, of course, it's much bigger and it sustained at that level. Why did it sustain at like 5 cents or whatever? Eventually it got to the point where there was no sellers left. And basically, there's probably a bunch of, like, especially for Doge, a bunch of little micro wallets that literally are never going to sell. They just forgot about their Doge and shit. And they don't even look. So I think that same thing will happen this time. You want a lot of little small buyers. You don't want necessarily just whales and such. And you certainly don't want just leverage in the system where only like the leverage players got in at the beginning and they're going to get like 100x and everyone else gets, you know, whatever. So that's what leads to a lot of those, the crashes and such. And I think there was some mention, some people were saying like even Chainlink had too many, like there was like really high long activity going on. Remember like recently we had like a weekly candle close like last week where it was kind of a hammer candle and it was just a classic candle, which I think like people basically ultimately long the top of that.
Too many scammers, Zephy.
What do you mean scammers? Oh, scammers, yeah. So so you have like, I think a lot of people entered into long positions and then those got liquidated on this dip. And it's good. Like you want to flush out the leverage positions. Me being like entirely a spot buyer, I don't take leverage positions or anything. I'd rather have the, you know, my coins at the end of the day, even if they're in the red, I'd rather hold them than to have them liquidated. So I prefer not to plan leverage and such for that reason. Cause I can always like buy more on dips. What I don't want to do is like lose my total bag size, over time. So, you know, it's just kind of a time in the market kind of idea. But yeah, look, I mean, I think like if you look at Link's perfect example, it may not have pumped to high heaven, but at the same time, its pullbacks are very, very like sane, like going from 22 to 18 and such. These are very, very sane pullbacks. They're fine. And pretty much like I just keep every single one of these dips at the bottom of these wicks, I'm pretty much adding some. Do I catch the exact bottom every time? No, but like, I think it's fun to like exercise my right to push a button. Like, you know, if I don't push a button, I don't feel like I'm getting the dopamine hit or whatever. So I figure like I'll buy some every single time, even if it's a little bit, just to sort of like satisfy the urge that like, okay, I spent time watching this fucking chart. And if I don't buy anything, like what am I doing exactly? Why am I watching this at all? Like, why might I just like leave for 6 months and come back? So by watching the chart, I'm paying attention. I'm seeing a few discounts here and there. And I add a little bits here and there, you know, relative to the total portfolio value. But like the top of the question, how low is dip going to go? I don't fucking know. Like if you guys know what that number is, then you're going to be richer than hell. The bottom line is like, it's all guessing to some extent or to a large extent. And that's why you have so many gamblers in the market. You have people that take on leverage shorts and leverage longs. Why do they do that? Because some people believe the price is going to go down. Some people believe it's going to go up. You have futures markets doing the same thing. And the aggregate effect is it causes price to go one direction or the other. And the thing is, you don't exactly know how many buyers are going to come in or when Elon's going to tweet or whatever the hell else, right? Like there's a lot of unknown factors. And all you have to decide for yourself is when dips happen, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to buy something? You're going to sit? You're going to wait? You're going to wait for a lower dip? What are you going to do? And a bunch of the coins I bought this last couple of weeks, you know, I bought some randoms, you know, just some, I mentioned like some junk coins that I don't even know if they're useful or not, but I figured like if we're going to get a, you know, like the herd is coming and you've got a bunch of newbies coming, then they'll buy a little bit of everything is my thesis. And in that I picked up some random stuff, right? So in those coins, like I had some little dips on those and all I did was like, if I got, let's say for the sake of argument, let's say I had $1,000 of that coin. And it dipped and it went to like 900, you know, I might just top off an extra $100 and just to, you know, like, you know, then basically just like add a little bit to the bag. And then if it goes down another to 10%, I might add another $100 and like, and then if we get like a really deep retracement, some nasty dip, then that's where I might like really consider, like doubling up that position, especially if it's a coin that I really like. If it's just more fuck around money and fuck around coins where I don't really care, that much about the coin, I don't believe in it for some particular reason, then I'll just sort of top off the thing just to take advantage of the dip. If I really love the coin for some reason, I think it has long-term potential, or like I don't mind being a long-term bag holder in that coin. So take a Chainlink, for example. I don't mind being a long-term bag holder that I, you know, I think if I got stuck with a bag in the red and it goes on, you know, if it sits there for years, I'll probably do really well with it. Then those I'm fine with. If it's these speculative coins I'm just screwing around with, like there might be some that I'll sort of martingale by like scaling in larger and larger as you go down. Others I'll just like what I call top off the, like if I intended to have like 1K worth of position in the thing or 10K or whatever, I'll just basically up the size to match that. You know, however much I'm down, I'll just match that. It's just like a mental way of just sort of like picking a strategy of how I'm going to do the dip buying. There's nothing special about it. It's just,
you know, honestly, Sefi, I personally, if I'm not underwater on most of my positions, I don't feel like, I don't feel good. You know, it's like something's wrong. I mean,
yeah. Like if you're not in the red for a little bit.
Yeah. I guess I'm really nervous. You know, it's like, okay, there's something wrong.
Yeah. If things go run up really quickly the entire time, you're wondering, should I sell? Should I sell? Should I sell? Right. Like, especially if you go up a lot at one time. It's a different type of kind of anxiety provoking, right? So, if you have like these modest dips and things, and you know, newbies to the market are always going to assume like the price go down means that some sort of scam is going on. Like, oh, like, you know, like you were saying, like, oh, he's been shilling this fucking coin and it went down in price, or like, and the funny thing is like, if you don't shill the coin, people are upset with you too, which is very funny. It's like, oh, yeah, he must be paid or something.
About it. He hasn't tweeted for 2 hours.
He hasn't tweeted for 2 hours. Like, what are the, you know, it's funny, like, the assumption that, like, first of all, that, like, most people in crypto space are not some kind of paid influencer, by the way. Like, if someone wants to send me money, I'll give you a wallet address. You can send me some free money. I'll shill Zephyr or something for you. But, like, yeah, I'm just kidding. I don't even do that. Like, I don't give out my wallets and stuff like that to most people for any particular reason. But yeah, like this like this theory that, oh, it must be a scammer or a shiller, or somebody's who's dipping or who's dumping or whatever. It must be one of those whales dumping. By the way, like in crypto, everyone should exercise their right to sell. Like you're basically like a newbie loser if you're like quite literally like shaming people for selling. The whole reason people are here is to be able to buy and sell. And in fact, it's the purpose of the market makers to sell into buyers so that you can get a good fill, and it's their job to buy into selling to for you to also get a good fill. If those you people, know,
the, yeah, actually, I think the most important work of a really good paid shill is to actually scare people and make them sell at the bottom. You know, that's the real job.
Like, yeah, it's interesting. You will see people post. They'll respond to like a post about something. You know, like where price has gone down, and they'll respond. It's clear that like they probably have they could very well have a short position in the market, or they have sold already and they want to buy lower. So they really kind of, they try to amplify that signal. This is why, like, I have largely gotten sort of
stupid. I mean, if someone like, I don't want to call any names here, but there's some accounts, they're like, okay, it's going to go back to like 20K or something like Bitcoin, right? And they're like complete in the bull move. They're posting this shit. It's like, yeah, and wait until whatever Jerome Powell farts or whatever, right?
Fundamentally, most of the people that make those claims that like don't understand financialization, like they don't understand like these price movements, are either very much newbies to financial markets, or B, they think they know way more than they actually do. Like, you know what I mean? Like. Look at the title of the space, and the way I opened up is like, I don't know how fucking low it's going to go. Like, that's why, like, I don't have any clue. This is why, like, even on charts and things, you can do things like draw trend lines, and you could do all these things. But the problem is you don't have any clue when those trend lines are going to break. There's no predictive effect of that. So they go up until they don't, and that's about it. Like there's nothing else to it. So this is why, like, I don't do very much. You know, I do very little kind of like predicting of, oh, price is going to go here, or draw lines, you know, showing like, you know, Elliott wave ideas, you know, where, you know, you go, oh, it's going to go up and down and up and down, and it's going to go up to here. Because like those things more often than not, you know, or just simply just like drawing chart art. They don't really predict anything for sure. And then like people are going to blame you. Oh, you said it was going to go here, and you showed on the calendar down there it was going to go there by 6 months. Whereas in reality, like, you know, we have no idea where these things are going to go. Like why? Like, so it's more simpler just to throw some bib extensions up there, and then that helps.
All these things don't have any predictive character, right? I mean, it's just the idea that you can ARP something into the future out of the past is already a very, let's say, low IQ assumption. You know, it's just impossible. It's just about as impossible that if there's a solar flare in the next 10 minutes, you know,
right?
You just don't fucking know, you know,
right? And exactly, like, and you don't know who's gonna like run a YouTube channel or what, you know, a pop suddenly. Remember, like, when we were at the bottom of Save Zephyr at like $12-13, there was a YouTuber. Or not a YouTuber, but one of the guys here on Twitter who has a pretty good size following started posting about Zephyr. So then it popped, right? Like, I don't know who that guy is. And I didn't have any idea that he was going to post that particular day or how many followers he had or anything else. What you can predict, though, is when a chart is bottoming out more and more and more, like that itself is an attraction. People see the chart and they're like, oh, that looks like a chart I might be a value investor in. So the accumulator or whatever is going to start seeing those charts and start getting interested. I know that's going to happen because, like, this is just standard practice amongst any asset. If some asset pumps, like, let's say it does a 10x, or, you know, I think Zephyr did like a 50x off the bottom or something, you know, there's attention on that project of some kind. What you don't know is if that attention is sustained or whether that project is useful. Like, meme coins can pump. Hell, you could list something on, you know, like a meme coin in, and it will pump within 10 minutes just because, you know, people just throw money at it. But can it pump over and over again? That's the question. And if you have, like, yeah, say, for example,
you just need these retraces. So basically new people are showing up and becoming the new backholders, right? I mean, it's just,
yeah,
it's the way it's got to work, because if someone's up like 30x on something and the majority, let's say, in a project is up like 30x, they create so much self-pressure at a point. That there's no way to get it any way higher, right?
So there's anything that goes up, like where like if I had, I don't know, let's say I had $10,000 worth of, you know, Zephyr at a dollar, and now it's like, you know, so you know, it might not have required very much money, but let's say it did a 50x, that's worth $500,000 at that point. Right, 50 times $10,000. So, you know, are there people going to be like, "Ooh, I got to take some profit and sell here"? Sure. So,
given the size of the project, if you really start selling it at a market order at $50, right, you're probably nuking the price down to 32 in a single candle.
Yeah, yeah. So, as liquidity increases, and also the liquidity depth increases, and the total number of users goes exponential. Then of course you have a whole new series of net buyers who are coming in, and that makes a difference. That's where, like, you know, like, because this is a project I believe in that I think is very interesting, I think it's very useful to me. And again, I don't have it, like Zephyr's example, I don't have any, like, besides having a big bag of this, I don't have any, like, I'm not a team member or some shit. Even if I was, I probably wouldn't tell you anyway. So, like, the reality is, like, I think it's interesting. So this is one where I might tweet about it for, like, you know, 6 months to a year or whatever, and go, okay, like, just, you know, until it kind of gets its wings, right? Like, and then it's going to have some bull market top, like, you know, at the end of, like, you know, whatever, 6 months to a year or 2 years, whatever the end of the bull market is, it's going to have some sort of top. And from there, it'll probably retrace, like, I don't know, like, you know, it might retrace like 95% or more, right? That's going to happen at some point. I don't know when, but the probability is high. But that's okay.
Now, like, well, given the fact that it doesn't pop that easily, I think it won't retrace that much as either. You know, it's like
Ooh, like, I'd be careful about that, man. Like, these things, like, you would think that you would think that, but like, look at Bitcoin as a good example. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's hard to tell. Yeah, when you're early, like these things generally, new cycle one coins will generally retrace about, they'll retrace a good 95%, like very, very commonly. In fact, many will retrace like close to 99%, if not like 97.99%, which is very deep. That much
leveraging and everything, like there's no lending protocol, there's no...
Yeah, this has less leverage. Yeah, yeah.
That makes it more... less for
the more reasons, yeah, the more reasons you have to hold it, the maybe the less likely it's going to go down. So for example, like Atom had a high inflation rate, for example, so it did not actually deteriorate from the top as much as some coins did, because people kept it because they liked the yield, they'd like to stake it and they'd like to keep it. On the other hand, the yield made a lot more, you know, coins in the market because it's inflationary yield, and so on the upside it didn't move up as much. But if you staked it the entire time and you're getting that whole yield, then even a modest amount of increase in price of the coin actually dumped, made your bag size increase substantially. So some of them are more staking coins like that, and they have, you know, some, they may not dip as deeply as some other ones would, but like, yeah, but these things, like, they're going to retrace, and as prices start to fall and people start losing their gains, then more people start to sell, especially people that are really in the green. And then, of course, there's people that panic buy or buy like way too high, and then they're in the red and they panic sell because they put too much money in, and they have too much money and it's going into the red. So if you bought like at $52, if you bought Zephyr, which is the local top this last year, then you would, and you bought like $1 million worth, and now your bag is worth $17.56 worth, then there's a certain level of capitulation that are going to happen to those people that bought too high. Either they're like, "Ooh, I bought too much and my money's going down. I gotta, you know, I can't afford this." And it looks like visibly like your money's going to zero, even though it's not. They don't have the patience to wait, or they see the opportunity cost in the market. They're like, "Oh, like I lost, you know, 50% here, but I could go and run over there and do a leverage long and maybe get my money back." So there is like that behavior as well, where people, like, when people are down, they panic, they get, and they're like, "Oh, I've got to like make it in this bull market, and I've got to go and find out another way to make this back because I happened to buy at the wrong price." So you see all sorts of behavior with different, it really depends on when people buy and what their mindset is at the time. It's remarkable how much variability there is.
I think there's way for more upside. Hey Robin, how you doing?
Yeah.
Hey Noob, how are you?
Yeah, I think like, to me, BTC getting back to all-time high is simply proof of life, and it happened with way less leverage than last season, especially like hedge fund leverage, and that's a good thing. And it happened with a lot of new net buyers in the form of ETF, so I think that's all a good thing. And some of these brokerages, they don't allow you to buy the ETF shares using leverage. You know, even in your margin account. So I think there's hopefully less leverage reflected in the total price of the market right now than in times past. Although I don't have any illusions that there's a lot of leverage. There's always a lot, because, you know, it's like easier to put in less capital and take on higher leverage than it is to buy large spot bags of any particular asset. People want to like put in 100K and they want to make a million. They don't want to make, you know, they don't want to put 100K and make 200K or something like that, you know. So there is a strong tendency to use leverage for these reasons. But it also creates a lot of the volatility. So if you ask, like, why do things become volatile? Even though, like, let's take, for example, Zephyr. There's not, you know, there's not a way to take much leverage on exchanges and things and buy that. However, that doesn't mean people didn't take leverage off of their other coins. Like, take, for example, a whale might take leverage off of their Ethereum, borrow some stables for that, and they might send that to, let's say, MEXC, and then buy the coin on leverage. And if the collateral drops in value, they might feel the need to solve for that by either covering, by sending more collateral, or they might, you know, be like, uh-oh, they're panicking, they have to actually sell the asset because they don't have the money to cover or some other problem. So the crypto space generally is amplified by leverage, whether or not the high leverage is on your particular coin or not. It's just like the whole space overinflates, if that makes sense. You learn over time not to underestimate that effect. It's actually quite pronounced. It's interesting stuff. Anyway,
how do you, Asefi, how do you see, because I think that it's been pretty clear that altcoins really haven't had their moment yet, like in the sun. It's been like definitely BTC dominant and then, you know, led by memes. Based off previous cycle history and everything, how do you kind of see that playing out? And how long realistically do you see, like, if the altcoin bull run does come, how long do you see it lasting? When do you kind of see the top? Like,
yeah, if this is similar to last time, which, you know, like, we have no idea. Yeah. The altcoin run last time, things started really popping off in terms of like Dino coins and Doge and whatever else, which was, by the way, a Dino coin by that point. These things started popping off right around 3 to 4 weeks after the Bitcoin first hit its prior high. And what happened was about 3 to 4 weeks happened. BTC basically started to consolidate at the prior high and then broke prior high. So I think it's right around that time. So 3 to 4 weeks in. And it also is that 3 to 4 weeks is also from a timing perspective where, like, you know, when BTC breaks prior high, it's like, or reaches prior high, it's like, you know, the hype cycle begins. Everyone starts talking about it and, like, you know, and that leads to part of it as well. And I think there's like a delay effect between when BTC hits high and not only when it breaks its high, like 3 or 4 weeks, but also the time it takes for the crowd to show up. So right now we're at about like 2 weeks in and we have about 2 or so weeks to go. And that's being reflected right now. If you go to Google Trends and pull up various coins, it's being reflected in the increasing search hits on different coins. Like Doge definitely picked up quite a lot. Doge, last time it was at this level of interest on Google Trends, it was right before the Giga Send. And how long does that last, Ivan? That lasted about 5 months. It was like late November to like, I think, you know, early May or something. Let me pull that up, actually. And another thing, too, what happened last season was different coins topped at different times. So BTC topped early in 2021. I think it was May 2021. And then, like, alts topped... in fact, let me get that exact number thing. But anyway, it was approximately a month different, long story short of it. And you had about like 5 to 6 month window and different alts topped at different times. Like, for example, some of the proof of work shit topped coincident with the same as the BTC top. And yet other things like Doge actually ran another month after that. So the problem is you won't know. So when the BTC top hits, you won't know exactly when that is. This is the problem. Like, you could say, well, I'm going to look at the charts and whatever and wait till the price rolls over. But understand, like, when BTC, like, on a flat curve, BTC might trend between, like, say, for example, 50K and 40K. We're talking about a big change. Your alts will drop a lot by the time you know for sure that BTC has, you know, turned around. So bear in mind, like, you can use past information, but what past information basically tells us is that, like, it's going to be really tough to tell. It's going to be really, really tough to tell at that moment, like, is it time right now or not? You can just...
Yeah, for sure. I think generally from what I'm seeing and some of the principles that I'll kind of use in, like, in indices and Forex, like, chart-wise, like, I think there's like a definitely a psychological number that Bitcoin I think will go for, and I think that everyone's kind of looking toward that 100 kind of that round number 100K kind of target. That's kind of what everyone's kind of been salivating for. So I think you can definitely do that, just kind of based off like that psychological number which exists in stocks and like every other thing, and then how much past that it goes. I mean, obviously it's impossible to say, but
so I have a fib level at 150.
Yes.
3K on the log scale, and that makes sense. What usually happens is you'll oftentimes hit the magic number, like 100K, but you'll go past it. Why? Because people put in shorts at that level, like thinking they're really smart. And what ends up happening is that, like, you burn those shorts on the way up. So it happened this time too. Like, look at our little trip to 73K, 69K or something was the top, and then we pushed past that because there was shorts in that position that got burned. And now the longs are getting burned, by the way. So now, like, I think like 64K, 65K, which is about where we are now, there's long positions being closed out and liquidated as well. So we're basically like liquidating back and forth. And then in the meantime, a bunch of new spot buyers and the ETF will come in over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks. And that will slowly kind of trend to push upwards. But yeah, there's going to be that typical volatility, BTC 100K. I think that's spot on. I think you could actually run to 100K quite quickly here, though.
Same. I almost think like on a very extended kind of target, like if it gets extremely fucking euphoric, I'm even willing to say that 150K is very possible. But beyond that, it's like, I think by then you should definitely not be looking at trying to long shit like heavily. I think the time to be longing and accumulating is clearly right now. There's a time to
accumulate. Now, yeah. No, in fact, like what I'm going to do. So for Monday, my thinking is I might just basically take random like stocks that I don't like, or maybe they've underperformed or something, or they're you know, I'm not that married to them for some reason. I might take some of my stocks and actually dump them into the BTC ETF in my brokerage come Monday, especially if we can take a little bit more of a dip here. Like if we hit like, oh, I don't know, like 60K BTC again, I think I could buy a bag once I know that the longs have been destroyed. Because here's the thing. Like if you buy
64.
What's that?
64 is the last leverage long. And then after 64.7, it goes all the way down to 58.
Oh, where there's a lot of them, you mean? Like a batch?
Yeah. So I'm gonna send you a screenshot.
Yeah. So if you have like, if you go to like 58 BTC, then I will go buy a bunch more, because what you want to have in life with crypto is you want other people to pump your bags using their leverage. You don't want to be pumping their bags using your money, if this makes sense, right? Like this is, and not only that, but like when these deep retracements happen, I don't care which coin it is, if you like your coin, you should absolutely buy the dip. And the reason is because then you're taking those coins out of the hands of market makers at a low price, and it basically fucks them over, right? Like the whole point is like the market maker wants to sell to you higher. You know, so you don't want to, like when you'd buy breakouts, for example, market makers are typically selling a lot of coins at breakouts because they need to like exit their positions and get ready to make the next sort of like level mark. You know, their goal is not to have the highest profit, but to be sort of delta neutral to some extent and make like money off the edge, off the trades and stuff. So what you want to do is like, you definitely want to take coins off market maker hands on dips. And I tend to do that on every major dip. So is this a major dip for BTC? Sure. It's a pretty good dip. It's like, you know, 70, almost 73 something down to like 66. That's a good dip. Pretty decent candle. And if by Monday I get a good opportunity, I'll add some in my ETF thing. In my regular crypto trading account, like I don't want to hold any standard BTC because I don't want to have like a taxable event with that. So I think the ETF is a nice instrument for acquiring some when you want to have like a separate, like, you know, trade, you know, you want to have a separate tradable bag with a different cost basis. So really like on these dips, I'm mostly just getting all my favorite alts and stuff and just topping them all off. But yeah, like if we get a fairly deeper dip, I think it'll be the buy of the century as far as alts are concerned, because if what I think is true happens, which is like that at BTC high, the herd is arriving within 2 or 3 weeks, you know, then this is going to be the dip of all dips to make, you know, most of your money, I would think. Like, cause like when the herd arrives, right, that's when alt season really begins. And at least historically it's been at that when BTC breaks high, you know, a lot of people consider that the bull market, or at least like there's a lot of upside after the break of high. And therefore people start telling their friends, oh, it's time to buy crypto and shit. And the all, you know, Total Threes chart is very, very like buyable. It's like it's in a reasonable position. And a lot of these coins are in good like relative price compared to their bottom. I mean, like look at Chainlink as an example. Like its $5 to $10 range was kind of like its range the whole bear market. It's only at $18, right? It's fundamentally very cheap relative to how much altcoins go up usually. Now, do we have some weird cycle where altcoins all perform badly? I suppose it's possible. There's no good reason for that to believe that's the case necessarily, especially as liquidity flows into the market with BTC and whatnot. So I don't believe that. I'm positioning myself and buying these dips with the intention that like I have a high belief based on the Google Trends data that people are showing up. They're coming to the party. And remember, these people come up from all over the world. So it's like all the world's money is a lot of money, even if everyone's a little bit poorer, like with inflation and whatever else. There's still a lot of potential speculators to show up. So anyway, like right here, I had mentioned ETH Classic before, Noob. Right here is perfect. It's like it's it had gone to almost $40, and now it's 31 or 30.66. This is like the perfect sort of level where it's like attempting to break out that fib level, and then if we have an alt season, it'll probably run hard. So yeah, like that's you a pretty good discount. You want me to buy
ETC, right? Nah, you're not getting me there.
What's that, BTC?
No. Ethereum Classic, ticker's ETC, right? I'm not gonna buy this. You can talk all day long. I'm not gonna buy it. Nah, just joking. Actually, when this thing split, right, there was some pretty decent price action right afterwards. Kind of interesting when the chain split. But yeah, it's like you said, it's almost like all proof of work coins. They have some life to it, right? Some more than the other ones.
Like the proof of work stuff, like the ones that are considered dino coins. Even myself, like being originally more of a Bitcoin maxi type person, like I was more extremist in that regard for a long time. Like even I underestimated how much upside you get off of proof of work layer ones if you happen to grab them near the bottoms, right? Like, you know, bear market consolidation ranges or just near the breakout when they're just starting to pop. And I have personally, like, you know, made the mistake of underestimating these things quite a lot. That's why I'm like this is why, like, I am more and more I think that crowd will simply come back and they'll simply buy these things because they're everywhere. They're on every app. They're in the top 100. And yeah, like over the years, like certain things will pop in the top 100 and leave the top 100. But the proof of work coins, man, like they have sustained like you wouldn't believe. And, you know, and you don't have to get like, even if you get like a 5X or something, you're doing super good on these because their risk is so low at these price levels. So I think they have their place.
ETH Classic is at 317
TC. I think you have the wrong one. It's at $30.57. That one.
No, I meant the liquidation levels at 30.17.
Oh, okay. So we're basically there already then. Like, because we're 30,
yeah, I mean, this
we're at 30.58 now.
Looks like the bottom.
which website are you using? You use Bybit or where are you at?
I am at TradingView.
But wait, how are you getting liquidation levels off of TradingView?
Oh, okay. So I sent you a screenshot and I just started playing with this. So you should add it to your indicators and tell me what you think.
Let me see. Where's the data coming from is my question.
That's a good question. But it is liquidation levels by Leviathan.
Oh, okay. What they're using is the perpetual futures contracts levels. That's not the spot levels, though. So futures levels don't directly affect spot prices, especially on small market cap coins like Ethereum Classic and stuff. So I wouldn't heavily rely upon that for too much, really. Like it could be a reflection of spot leverage, but it may not. So futures basically are just contracts that don't actually have any underlying asset in them. Like they don't actually create any actual sell pressure, if that makes sense.
A little bit.
So yeah, you can only use like it's a reasonable guide. I think that's fine, but like, there are other places like Glassnode and stuff where you have to pay for subscription and shit. And I don't bother because I don't really do leverage positions, but you can actually find consolidated data from lots of different exchanges where the actual leverage positions are in terms of magnitude and such. But anyway, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me that that we are currently at the 200-day, the 200-period moving average on the 4-hour chart for ETC, for example. So pretty good bull market buy, in my opinion, right here. Like the 4-hour chart's a pretty good place when you retrace to the 200. It's not the 200 day, it's the 200 4-hour period moving average. ETC has pulled back also to its 50-day, which is at $30. It's Ethereum Classic's like 200-day moving average, though, is at $21.42. Periodically during a bull market, every so often, you're going to get a pullback all the way to the 200-day moving average. The last time it happened for ETC was in January of 2024, and it's been kind of relatively up only since then. So if you had purchased at $18, you're doing pretty good today at like $31. And it's been pretty much up only. Like and of course, like its 200-day moving average is climbing. So I think like once the 200-day moving average is climbing, one of the things to be rest assured is, let's say I buy the wrong price. Like I bought some at like $36 and I added to it now at $31. Now, let's say I buy at the wrong price. So long as the 200-day moving average is in the uptrend, even if it dips to like $20 or whatever, it's very likely to regain momentum and pick back up again, do fine. So if you're in a bull market, you can fuck up a lot and still do fine. Now, you might be pissed that like you bought it at the slightly wrong price and you could have had double the amount and all that shit, right? Like there's always like regret when you could have bought a more perfect buy. But at the same time, you at least know that in a bull market, when the 200-day is like in a clear uptrend, the odds that if you just simply hold, it's going to go back to up to the price you bought is very, very good.
Yeah.
And in a bull market, it doesn't take that long either. We're talking about within like 3 months.
There's also one thing where you're talking about this leverage indicator, right? So we dipped on Friday, like we hit like 65.5 on Bitcoin. And just 2 hours ago, we went like 64.8 or something. And it's a weekend, right? So on the weekend, it's pretty easy for whomever wants to move the Bitcoin price because the big boys are basically sleeping. As long as the whole thing returns to where it closed, right? We have seen this in the last year a lot of times where basically on the weekend, Bitcoin price went up and down. As long as it matched the futures prices where the CME closed, they wouldn't be exposed to anything.
Although I don't think the trading desks at these big institutions are closed anymore on weekends when it comes to BTC. So they might be buying the dip in anticipation of selling that to.
Yes, they might be buying that. But what I'm saying is like if there's inflows in Fidelity, they just can't operate on the weekend, right? So if there's inflows on these big ETFs, right, they have to buy on the weekdays. It's just because it's all regulated. They can't do this. I mean, someone can buy actually in anticipation, but the real flows, they still come on Monday, right, when the market opens. And I think like this round tripping on the weekend, and now we're putting a low, let's say, on the downtrend. It's like, oh, everyone's like, okay, let's sell. But it looks really fishy. You know, it's like we could actually easily be over 70K on Monday by lunchtime, right?
The movements start getting really quick here. Yeah, for sure. So I think the thing is, like, it's like, what do you do if you get a big dip? Okay, I have a plan for that, and I have a plan to pick up some ETF shares or whatever. And if we don't, then I'll just ride what I have, no problem. It's kind of like, that's the theory.
Yeah, I mean, if it dips deeper, then it's going to dip way deeper, right? I mean, it's not just going to dimple around here. But I'm not sure if it's getting there, right? Someone's got his hand up there. Is it Morty? I think he wants to say something.
Yes, sir. Hey, actually, I was thinking about something yesterday. So, do you think there was a reliable source to kind of time the top, for example? Can we kind of say, let's say in the last season, BTC went through 10 corrections, and on the 10th correction that it went through, it was kind of the top? Can we compare that to any historical corrections to kind of time the top? Does that make sense?
Not really, because remember, like, the top was put in by stuff like SBF shenanigans. It was put in by like cascading liquidations of Threadneedle Capital and DTC. Genesis, you know, and all these like groups, right? Like, so a lot of shenanigans are going on that aren't going to be the case this time. So, like, I would say, don't try to even bother predicting anything based on any of that. It's like not useful at all. It's just this time is very much different. Like, I know how that phrase is like, this time's not different. What's not different about this time is there'll always be like amplified leverage and a lot of leverage you don't have good access to understanding, like visually. But you know that there's likely to be less leverage only because interest rates are so high, right? So like that's different this time as well. So there's a lot of things different now compared to like the quantitative easing time period and stuff. So that's why some people would argue that like maybe BTC doesn't do that well because we don't have easy, cheap money to, you know, basically borrow off of to do like a Mike or Saylor deal where you're like borrowing off your house and shit and going buying, you know, crypto and stuff. So, yeah, really tough to say, like where the top's going to be and all this sort of business. All you have to ask yourself is if you, like, do you intend to sell? Do you intend to hold? Like, how much is good enough? Like, maybe good enough is now. Like, if you bought near the bottom of this market and you're doing well, maybe you just sell and get the fuck out. I don't know. Like, you know, like, it depends on your theory of what you're trying to do with your money. Like, and it, but like, the idea that you and me are going to be able to sort out like exactly where the top is, like, I've never been able to do it with certainty. I do know that like the, like 618 fib and stuff, like fib extensions do work pretty well in terms of predicting approximate levels where you're going to see buying and selling. But which of those fib levels is going to be the absolute top is trickier. And we talk about that a lot. Like, I think the fib extensions are phenomenal as far as like managing expectation of exponential growth assets on a log scale chart. What they're not perfect for, and they will never be, is predicting which level you're going to hit. Because here's the thing, like, I can make up whatever number I want. Like, oh, Fetch is going to go to $50 or something. Like, but it doesn't have to go there just because I say so, right? Like, there's nothing, you know, like, I don't know when the money's going to run out. I don't know when, like, people's wallets are completely empty and they've already spent all their money on crypto that they have, right? Like, that, there's a point that that arrives. It's called buyer exhaustion. You just don't know where it is. And you're never going to know these things. Like, that would assume that you know the contents of everybody's, like, bank account. Like, we don't, right? Like, and their risk appetite, for that matter.
Yeah, Dr. Seffi, I'm exhausted all day long. What can I do?
Exhausted watching the charter. Oh, you're exhausted generally. Yeah, like, there's probably like tablets and things for that. Like, drink more water or something, right? Like,
and another question. Sorry. Where do you check where people have the highest level of long position or short positions?
I stopped even looking, in the sense that, if you sort of look at fib levels, most people gamble on those levels. And, you know, they gamble on things like even numbers, like 100K Bitcoin. They gamble on prior high. So there's certain like benchmark levels that everyone can see. And so everyone tends to play on them. And then you ask yourself, what are the liquidation, like, where are they putting their stop losses? And they're going to put them at least like 10% or above or below their position, whether it's a short or long, at least 10%, right? So the common large size orders are 10%. So you're going to always see pumps that go up 10% and down 10% below those various levels anyway. So like, that's why the price action never follows the FIPS exactly. It's because it's going to pump above and below.
Yeah. Interesting. Thanks for answering my question, by the way, of like how ideally it should play out, just because, like, again, let's really see how and when, if when alts have their moment in the sun. And I'm super curious to see how fast like market caps can like double or triple or whatever. I feel like shit happens so fast, at least from people that I've spoken to and who have like participated in altcoin runs where they've been, you know, in coins that have done 10-20x, it can happen pretty quick. So it's also about having a plan of like, where are you going to sell and, you know, how much are you going to sell, et cetera.
The expectation is that 10x's are common in alts. So I think that's going to be one sort of common feature. And then it's like, when is it going to happen? Can you approximate that a little bit? And then if you're early enough and you've been playing around during the bear market, then you're much, much more likely to not need any of this fucking like TA knowledge and whatever, right? Like, it's like there's, if you're early enough, you can just basically make a lot of mistakes and be right, like, long-term either way. And that's the realization that most people come to in the crypto space. It's like if you sort of missed it, if you feel like left out somehow, then you basically wait till, like, you know, 200-day moving averages are in the downtrend and they flatten out, and then you're like, aha, I'm going to start getting in here. This is officially a bear market environment, or at least like the bottom is in. Because, and remember, 200 days for a moving average, that's a long time, right? It takes basically 2 years to be sure you're in a bear market. That's why these things last so long, because these long curves take a while to sort of flatten out. So like 1 to 2 years would be not uncommon in this purely speculative asset, right? Like, asset class. If it was a fundamentals based class, like, for example, you know, I don't know, like an oil producer produces oil and there's supply demand and whatever else, that's different. Like, then there's going to, fundamentals will drive like maybe the price action and not necessarily these like charts things. But in a speculative asset class, the chart stuff is actually more relevant because then everyone's just speculating, trying to steal money from somebody else. And therefore, like, everyone's looking at the same information and they're speculating off of that. And, you know, then you have to ask yourself, how do you know, like, what does a whale consider a good buy? And like, you know, and then that's going to be when, you know, these long moving averages flattened out. And now we've had that for what, 1.5 years. And now the 200-day moving average has been an uptrend for about 6 months. And we know that like all the newbies and new buyers don't show up immediately when that starts happening. They show up kind of late to the party. Like it takes like a year and a half or more for everyone to sort of like come to the party. And that's why you get kind of, you know, like an uptrend that might last a year to 2 years would be very, very common. People keep saying this time is different in that maybe it's all going to happen really quickly, that everything's just going to pop off very quickly and then like die down quickly. I don't know that that's the case necessarily. We don't have as much leverage in the system, so you could theoretically have a much more, you could have a typical, you know, 1.5 year or 2 year run. This is what makes calling the top so damn difficult. It's like it's just different each time and you don't really know. So
I think if you
like from here, like let's say for example, you own a bunch of like layer one coins of some kind. Let's say for example, we like a Doge or Ethereum Classic, whatever. It's very, very fair to say, get the fuck out if you're at a 10X, right? That's very fair. Like forget about where the top is. If you're popping off to a 10X, like get the fuck out. Don't even care about anything else. I think that's very reasonable. Like it depends on the type market, of coin.
Market share versus market cap is kind of despairing as well between Bitcoin and the altcoins.
Yeah, of course. And yeah, what I meant is like when I meant layer ones, I meant like the ones we were talking about earlier, like the Doges, the ETCs. If you're talking about like microcaps and stuff, sure. Like you could definitely say, okay, well, if I get a 20X here, I'm out. Right. Like you could push that because you're in the highly speculative, high risk ones for higher multiples in 10X. Right. So in those, you wouldn't want to sell too early. You'd really want them to push 10X plus, maybe 20, even 100X on some of them, depending on how early you bought them, of course. Right. So because these things all go to insane valuations when the herd arrives, like when the gigatop happens. Usually everything will do another 300% very quickly. It's like at the very end, it's like this gigantic big burst. It's pretty, the blow off tops are pretty fun anyway.
Up 1,000%.
Yeah. Like great. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, like within a very short period of time too. Like it's like, it just goes straight vertical.
Yeah. You see them. They're like 100,000%. It's crazy. I don't like looking at DEX tools for that reason.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh shit, I missed out on this. I missed out on that. No, I think like, again, it depends on what you guys are playing with. If you're on the like ultra micro cap type of thing and, you know, just playing that video game, have fun, play the game. And, you know, like that's what it is. But like, if you're talking about like, you want to actually be able to exit in a timely manner. Yeah. What constitutes a timely manner varies dramatically depending on, what you're trying to do. I think if you have a very, very large bag, like let's say by large, I'm going to say like, let's say someone has like $1 million in the market and they just want to make like, you know, and if they're going to be doing pretty good, if they 5X that money to 5 mil, it's not unreasonable. Just get the fuck out, like make your 5X, get out. And then like, you could do another 5X pretty, in fact, you could do another 10X quite easily in the next bear market. So that's like, you're basically, if you're fucking around, you're risking 5 mil going to 50. The next cycle, right? Like the risk is quite high if you try to get the perfect tops and shit. Like it's very, very easy to make a whole lot of money if you exit a lot earlier than everybody else, but you have the time on your side. So think about that. Like just think about the math on that. Like 1 million to 5 on a 5X and then another bear market, you're buying like the bottoms of all this shit, you know, and you could probably get a credible 10X again. And I'm presuming, of course, you didn't get a 10X this time. Like you very much could, but let's say you exited a 10X, you do another 10X the next cycle. Now you have your 100X, but you did it on much safer coins as opposed to having to find like some fucking, you know, like random, the latest greatest meme coin or whatever. So yeah, because meme coins are fun. I mean, play your video games, but you're not putting life savings in those, I would assume. That's probably a bad idea.
The bull markets only last, I would say, 100 to max 200 days. So you got to expect almost 3.5 years of bear market.
Yeah, and by meme coins, I mean, like, there's different kinds of those, too. There's some that are, like, total layer ones. Like, Doge is a full layer one. It's not exactly just a meme coin. It's an actual, you know, like, it has some store value function to it. But if you're talking about, like, full-on meme coins, like, just the random things that shows up, you know, next week on some exchange, then, yeah, make sure that you are just entertaining yourself with those things, like, small bags. It's fun if, like, your $1,000 bag goes to 100K.
Remember the cycles. Just always remember the cycles.
But use small amounts. That's your gambling money. Just have fun, entertain yourself. That's great, right? Like, do those things. It's actually good to, like, play around in all these little things, because you learn more every time you do something. You're like, okay, how do meme coin people behave?
And I like to think of it as like a $50 bill or a $100 bill. Why am I buying this NFT for $100? Well, if it's a $100 bill, it's only going to be $50 in a couple of years. So
even outside the monetary part, though, like, yeah, anything can go up, right? But, like, even outside the monetary part, if you own some meme coins and they're, like, you know, up 100,000% or something, maybe the market's getting kind of hot, right? Like, you can use these things as a way to sort of, like, as a barometer of how everything's doing. And if you're not participating at all, you don't realize how frothy everyone's getting or whatever, right? Like, so by being at every stage of this, I think it's interesting as a point of research. Like, it's like a canary in the coal mine, you know, kind of an idea. You have a little bit of money in these different areas, in different sectors and whatever, and you're like, oh, this sector is not performing very well this year because I own some Uniswap tokens and they've done shitty or something. You'll have a better feeling for how all the different areas are doing. And that might give you a little bit of insight in terms of what might happen next season or something like that. You know,
diversity always helps to if you'd like to hedge your losses.
Yeah, or just like diversity diversifies your education is another way to look at it too, right? Because you learn about the different ecosystems by having a little, you know, little bag in each thing. And sometimes you'll be surprised. You're like, holy shit, I didn't wheels. Like, what's that?
They're like training wheels if you're just starting out.
Exactly. Get a little bit of these things just to sort of see what happens, just for fun. And then for, you know, yeah, the learning purpose of it. And, you know, like, you'll have a few of those rug pull and shit. You need to experience your own personal, like, you know, rug pull Armageddon for some coin that, like, someone pulls the liquidity. You're like, oh. Is that what can happen, right? So newbies don't have any clue what all that shit is, like, you know, liquid market depth and who actually supplied the liquidity, you know, can they remove it and all those kinds of issues. So, yeah, it's like a
slippery slope.
Yeah, and you also will learn things like, oh, shit, I connected my wallet to God knows what website and had my wallet drained. So by using small amounts of money when you're playing around, definitely have, like, a separate wallet, by the way, for entertainment. Do not use your main wallet with, like, all your assets. It's called
a burner address.
Exactly. Yeah, everyone should be doing that shit, because you will lose all your money if you have all your shit in one wallet. It's just simply a matter of time. Plenty of people have had that happen. So be careful. The longer we go into the season, the more newbies show up in these spaces and stuff. And, like, then you're, like, have to sit around making sure everyone doesn't get fucked over.
And also, bad actors will pick on you in particular, so you have to be mindful of that as well. It's not just random people will attack you if you're out there.
Yeah, for sure. Be careful on Twitter, and I'm sorry, not Twitter, especially on, like, Discord and Telegram groups. People come up with links to airdrops and all sorts of other garbage. Most of that shit is nonsense. Like, if it sounds too good to be true and it doesn't come from the official Twitter account of that particular site, it's probably a scam. Sometimes even the Twitter accounts get hijacked. And this happened recently to one of the Cosmos people. And, like, they started, like, shilling some sort of, like, scam airdrop for you to connect your wallet to rip off all your money, stuff like that. Wallet drainer type contracts that you might connect to.
As a person who tries to drain others, there are lots of us.
Yeah, periodically. Yeah, like CBW here, which is like,
come rocket warrior, come bucket warrior.
I don't know, Bruce, the CBW thing, it's triggering me, this acronym. Like, it just doesn't look right. I'm like, what is this thing? Like, right,
Bruce? Yeah, but remember when you condensed your name from six things to what it is now, and I didn't complain.
Did I condense it? I think it's always like this. Anyway, whatever it is. The thing is, like, CBW. I'm like, what am I going to call him now? Kabwa. Or something.
Safi, I aped into Book of Meme.
Okay.
Ooh, how did that go, Kareem?
I made money. And then I'm holding. And I aped back in. And then it just tanked. And I held. And now I think we're on a stable recovery.
Okay. Is
it like Kobe Bryant, like the next one? Like, what's like the next one? I heard it was Kobe Bryant. Or is it?
Rest in peace, Kobe.
I know. Kareem.
Don't make money off someone's death.
It's going to be like a bunch of dead people coins next, maybe.
It's Solana. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to get into Solana just to play around.
It's not for you, man. It's only for people who deserve to make money.
Why do I not deserve to make money?
Because you still have an unprivated your account and you selfishly hide your tweets from everyone.
Ah, dude, the bull market is going to be... I almost want to keep it even more private now.
You got like 10 followers. What are you doing? What are you even trying to hide?
Oh, I'm going to hoard my little special tweets from everyone.
I don't have any special tools. I just don't want to deal with... I don't want to deal... with it, with whatever might come around, like, you know, I just
why
don't
do you
wanna...
think anyone cares? Like, it's a there's I don't spiritual think anyone, narcissism here.
I don't think
it's
anything,
fine, Robin. Nobody cares.
No one cares, exactly. But it's the people that don't. That's the whole reason why I'm doing it, is because no one cares. No one cares. Right, hang on. That's
is
the
that,
reason that I'm
is
doing
that your
it.
Real name?
My Twitter? No, no, it's not. Technically, no, it's not. But part
so
of it is
you're hiding a profile that's not even real.
Part of it is my real name.
Why don't you just get rid of the real name parts, put some fucking duck as your profile picture and chill out and just unprivate. And then maybe people will like you.
All right. I'll test it for a week. How much time should I give it?
I'll give you 2 weeks before I try to train you.
That way, if you post about something, people can retweet it and stuff, you know, like, otherwise what's the point of posting it all? No one's going to see your shit.
I know. It's really nothing that special. I mean, I don't think it is. Other people might think it is.
You can just post for your personal diary. That's cool.
Or just make a new account and just fucking go for it. There's no point in this account as it is now.
Right now in this space, you know, I see a cow or an ox, and then I see the letter R and then dot, dot, dot. It's the funniest thing. Listen, cow R. You know.
All right. I'm going to hop back in with my other account. Be right back.
You have shamed him out of using his current account, Bruce.
Well, I just don't see the point in it all. Like, why would you use an account so much but be private and also have no followers? Just like, post for the world, give yourself to the world, deliver yourself as a vessel of love to everyone and let them experience who you really are. And if it's too personal, just depersonalize it.
Coach, when's the space on Colt? I want to put it on my calendar.
The space on what?
Colts.
On what?
Colts. Maintaining, managing, creating, recruiting for Colts.
Oh, I don't know.
I saw the poll today. That's all. That's why I was asking.
Oh, a cult. C-U-L-T.
Oh, shit. Did I not pronounce that right?
Oh, I don't know. Your voice isn't coming in very clear. That's all.
Hey guys, what's going on? Miss anything? Do you know who this is?
Hello?
Hello?
You don't know who this is, huh? Okay.
I've got a question sort of for Bruce. I don't know if it's a question, but been following the Cum Rocket trade for a while, And I think I sort of came to a similar conclusion to yourself, except maybe a bit of a higher market cap. And so I found some of your tweets because you were the only one that was sort of tweeting about it. And I think what you say about this vibe investing, I think it's extremely profound. I just wonder if I think Kamara could go to 100 mil market cap, but I just wonder if now it might go down, you know, a 50% from here potentially or whatever. So I have sold out of some of it. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are. Are you just sort of holding the whole time, or you think you're going to jump in and out of that trade, even if you still believe in it long-term sort of thing?
Personally, I try and spot things when they're really bottomed out. Like, I ate in a large amount to Come Rocket when it was, I think the average buy, I think I noticed it at about 4 million, but then I stupidly told a bunch of people over 2 days, which raised the price. I always make the mistake of telling people before I buy myself. So I think my average buy-in was about 5, maybe a little bit more. And then literally what I do is just hold it. I don't think about it again. Because at that point, I reckon there's no real downside. And if I'm correct, like if my thesis or the feeling is correct, then I don't really have anything to worry about. I think I would have more regret if I tried and traded in the short term and then it surged to some crazy number or whatever. I don't know. These things just aren't predictable. Like for me, the predictable aspect is finding it when it's bottomed and the factors of success. And then precisely when it goes viral, I'm not really sure. I think when I originally invested, I expected it to happen over about 6 months. In reality, people noticed earlier. So now it's at, I don't know what the price is now, like 18, 20 million market cap, something like that, right? I think it's up like 4x something. And I think at peak, it went to like 34. But yeah, personally, I don't try and trade the short-term stuff because I think it's very easy to fall into, I don't know, like selling a 2x and then missing out on the main move. And also, I just don't have time or interest. I'd rather spend that same time spotting more things that are in that prior situation than I would trying to trade things in the short term.
True. Yeah, thanks for that. Because I think I got in around...
Like, it's like value investing, basically.
Yeah.
More or less. Well, yeah. I think as a thesis, then I think... I've said this many times, but I think long-dead meme coins that had a really strong viral sort of imprint on the unconscious are going to do well. And I think there's a lot of factors to that. I think, firstly, it's like when it starts pumping, every cent of price has an increased amount of attention because everyone remembers Come Rocket, right? You see this, you saw like a small glimpse of this. When the price started going up, people started quoting it. They're like, Come Rocket is back, or posting images like, how am I going to explain my Come Rocket purchase to my accountant? Like all these things started getting posted again. And a few of the like mini celebs, like mini crypto celebs, with a higher amount of followers started posting about it as well. Like you saw a preview of that stuff. I think it'll happen again. And also, as somebody who talks to the Come Rocket founder, she launched through TikTok. And she launched in like different retail channels like YouTube, TikTok. When it started pumping again, all of those old TikTok people started messaging her, which was interesting as well. She showed me loads of messages. She was showing me messages with people saying like, oh, is Come Rocket back? I'm gonna buy it back again. Like they're all sort of waiting. As soon as they get the alert, as soon as they get the bat signal, they're back in, which is interesting as well. But yeah, I think overall for me, I'm not into the trading in the short term thing. I think there are enough opportunities to notice that are also relatively bottomed as well, or relatively like in that prior state. And that's just a better use of attention. And I also think it's just early, right? Like, we've crossed all-time high. And I think traditionally, or historically, at least according to what Sefi says, I've only been in crypto 2 years, but he says, you know, retail comes in a month or two. Not now. It's just beginning to pick up.
I think
I perhaps just got a bit scared in that just how quick it's played out and how fast we've run up in Bitcoin. And as well, just like the S&P, we've just had green weeks for the past like 8 weeks. And I think we might just be a little bit overextended. So I just decided to hop out for a bit, which has
you're probably right. Yeah. I'm just giving my perspective, but I mean, at outset, I put a relatively small amount in, right? Whereas somebody would need to think as you did or you do, if it's becoming like a sizable part of your portfolio and you're like, okay, I'll take my initial out or whatever, then yeah, why not? But yeah, generally, I'm not like a short-term trader. I buy things when I perceive they are sort of bottomed and beginning to get momentum again, and then I just forget about it.
Well, just another point, I think I really agree with how it's comparable to value investing, in that I think when you have a coin, like in terms that it's just dead holders that are like, if they would have sold by now, like if they haven't sold by now and the coin's dead, they're not going to sell ever. So when you're looking at a $6 million or a $4 million market cap, is it possible for it to go down to $2 million market cap? Probably not. And so I think that can give you confidence. And so I think my average buy price was $10 million. I think already, given where Bitcoin is now, that Bitcoin will probably go to 100K in like the next year or so. I doubt it's going to get below 10 million market cap. So I can see why it might be a mistake for me to hop out now. But I also have a bit of another way to think about it as well, is I always think about, this was kind of my thesis as well, was like, it's almost like in physics where you can have like, potential energy. So like you can have a rock up at the top of a hill and it's gravitational potential energy and it's just sort of sitting there. It's like just latent. And I think that's what the cum rocket situation was
exactly
the fact that it had been to 400 mil market cap before. And there was this thesis that as soon as price starts to match the thesis, there would be that positive and reflexive feedback loop and it'll just reinforce itself. And so I think you could buy cum rocket for a discount to the intrinsic value of that that latent, like,
exactly,
there's some worth to that, you know. Yeah,
exactly. Like the general like high level thesis was like, what is the worth of 150,000 holders? What is the worth of a really fair distribution? What is the worth of that prior attention? What is the worth of Elon previously mentioning it? What is the worth of a girl launching it who happens to be hot and attractive and have a TikTok and have burned 86% of supply? What is the worth of the activity of the community? Like, what is the worth of when price starts to go up, the multiplier on attention you'll get versus other coins? Like, all of that together seem to me to be much more than 4 million market cap, right? Like, just logically, like that all of that sum of attention, that sum of distribution, the sum of people who are maybe dormant holders or active holders, all of that put together seems to be much more. So it's almost like an elastic band has got maximally stretched and needs to contract back to what its fair value is, right? And I think you could form a sort of a crude model of the financial value of that attention, but I think it is certainly more than 4 million market cap, in my opinion, which is why I invested.
Yeah, thanks for that. That's good.
And then I think like in situations like that, it's almost like it's just sort of primed. It's when it's like somebody needs to come along and sort of kick it. Maybe I kicked it a little bit and some other people kicked it. There's another guy called Thorchain Bull. I think his name is like TCB on Twitter. He started posting a bit as well. He's got like 50,000 followers. We both sort of just like kicked it a little bit, almost like we'd thrown a small stone into a lake just to see the ripple. And it just instantly surged, right? And what happened was a very organic sort of ripple where a lot of the OG old people started getting interested again. right? And we saw like many influencers find it interesting to quote tweet about it or interesting to mention it briefly in videos and things. A very small like preview of what's to come, I think. But the other thing about it is like what I mean by a multiplier on attention for every price gain is like as Cum Rocket doubles and other coins double, what do you think influencers or people on Twitter are going to want to comment about, right? Like which is going to get more engagement, which is going to get more laughs? I think Cum Rocket is a pretty good like engagement catalyst for anyone, right? It's a funny thing to mention. And also the nostalgia effect is really powerful. So I think all of those things together made it a really good buy in my opinion. It's sort of a new kind of value investing. Yeah, it's like spotting a discount to the attention value.
I think that's interesting. And I think, well, it's because I only discovered you about like fucking 20 days ago. But it's interesting that you, I fucking find you that shit you write hilarious, by the way. But I think it's interesting that you say, yeah, you only recently came into crypto and you're sort of, because I think, yeah, because I've tried very briefly to fucking do a bit of technical analysis and short-term trade. I know I can't do it. Like I don't have any competitive advantage there. But I think with this, is something that's more like I can understand. Like I don't think you have to be a genius to figure this out. Is like, just the like a long taking sort of a long-term view of like, okay, what are people's opinion? Like all you're doing is you're betting people's opinions are going to change, right?
So I would argue that it's more about the comedy and less about opinion.
True. I think the comedy has always been there, but I think once the price comes back, then like it still needs
to come. It would bring it back into reality at that point for sure.
Yeah, you're betting that like if you were to do a brain scan of humanity's brains and find the amount of neurons they have about Cum Rocket, the past thoughts, the present thoughts, all of that stuff, and put a value to it, would that be like a discounted value to the amount of brain tissue or not? And then as price rises, the increased activation in all of those brains, the activation of neurons, the blood flow to different areas of the brain, all of that sum of tissue and blood flow, how does that relate to the price or the market cap, right? Like it's sort of like that. I'm sort of like doing a cross-section of all the brains of humanity and I'm assessing based on the volume if the market cap is accurate. And I'm saying, right now, or at least in the past when I invested, there's sort of an asymmetry between a great amount of brain tissue that will wake up in future versus a discounted market cap. It's like brain tissue to MCAP ratio low.
Yeah, I like that. And I like what you said, how like it exists in like our collective unconscious.
It's there. Like it has this powerful nostalgia thing. When you see it rise again, it's like, oh yeah, like, fuck, yeah. I remember that. And you almost feel a sort of it's like an old friend returning. You almost want to embrace it, right? Or at least you want to quote tweet it. Like, I think at best, you're like, ah, oh, I remember that. I'm going to buy some. Especially if somebody like me starts trying to like brainwash you and evangelize you and lay out the thesis or something, you're going to want to buy some. And then at worst, you'll be like, ah, that's funny. And then you maybe post something funny or quote tweet it, right? Or you pay attention a little bit, much more than you otherwise would for some new like meme coin that's just been made, like some fucking duck with a hat or some bullshit. Like you don't really care, but Cummies, Cum Rocket, that's something. Elon's already mentioned that. It's already gone turbo viral, right? It's already funny. It's already outrageous. It already got banned on Twitter. It's like, what's happening with that? I didn't know that was still alive. Like it makes you curious. Your brain sort of fires up, right? It's a mind virus. It's like a latent, dormant mind virus. It can be activated by something. And it's like, I see it almost like, if you think about each separate crypto, when each separate crypto doubles in price, each one will have a different multiplier on attention, right? And I think the ones that have an increased multiplier on attention are generally the better bets. And I think that's fairly intuitive what will do that, right? Like I think Cum Rocket, it's fairly intuitive that if price doubles, market cap doubles at any point, it will have more attention than other stuff.
It is fair game though, in respect to that. And I keep hearing about this a lot, the law of big numbers, and it becomes a little more difficult each time, obviously.
Yeah, especially because like low market cap things move so quick. The buyers are become euphoric and start posting about it like crazy faster. So yeah, there is a bit of an effect of the small market cap stuff. And you know, when you said earlier, by the way, like it doesn't take a genius necessarily to figure it all out. Maybe not, but it does take quite a bit of information like to understand all of this. So the meta is that like you have to have some idea of like the sociology of the situation, the individual psychology. You know, things like token distribution and whatnot are not obviously apparent to everybody, like unless you've been in crypto for a while. And so there's like experience and knowledge.
The on-ramping, even just the on-ramping in general, if you're not familiar with it, can be daunting.
No, I'm not talking about it from the perspective of like some new user showing up. I'm saying like understanding the meta of like why these things go up in value and how, and like
what Bruce is describing. You can't make sense of it.
And you need a combination of things as well, right? Like,
yeah,
you can have plenty of people out there who think as I do at the point of investment, but then and they'll like then they'll premature ejaculate, right? Then they'll hesitate.
Solana is hot right now. Can you tell me that Solana is going to be hot 1 year from now?
No, but that's the thing. Like at 1 year from now, there'll be other things that are hot or whatever, right? Like, so there's always some opportunity of some new thing happening. You know, whether you decide to jump in or not, like a lot of things I tend to buy are like utility based things. Like, you know, like I have some fundamental belief that there's utility in it and whatever. That's not necessarily, or not often, actually the better like financial like investment. Like, that's not these things. It's not automatic. The assumption for a lot of people would be like, oh, if it's useful, then people are going to buy it. But not necessarily. Usefulness creates a gravity because useful is more easy to define how much something's worth. And so that can create a impact. Like, for example, if there's like a coin that generates revenue somehow, like let's say it's a GMX token and you get revenue from owning the coin because like, you know, from the trades on the platform, you get, let's say 5% yield right now.
Yeah.
It's a good example. So what happens when the price doubles of the coin? Oh, the yield's only like 2.5% because like it's paid in dollars or whatever. So then the thing is like, oh, wait, this thing is overvalued because.
A huge thing there is is valuation relative to similar products.
Yes. So like that's another thing, especially if you have something that doesn't have a lot of comparables, then it goes into like a more pure price discovery. Like, for example, AI coins this season, like there weren't that many things that did AI shit before. It's like, so nobody knows what they're really worth. So that has more potential upside because like, people can just hype the living shit out of it. They're like, oh, this thing's going to go to $1 trillion because AI. Like, there's no rationality.
That's so NVIDIA right now with the stock market. They don't know what to make of that one.
Yeah, exactly. So it has some speculative multiplier. The hype cycle gets bigger. The biggest hype cycle is usually the first hype cycle for a thing in terms of like percentage return on investment. And once people realize, oh, wait, the 3D printing hype cycle, it turns out that most people don't want a fucking 3D printer in their house. But like the way they made it sound when the 3D printer hype cycle was going on is like, oh, we're going to be making fucking everything in our, you know, in our.
Unless you want to make guns and bullets, I guess.
No, but there was a time when like you're going to make everything with it. You know,
there are people out there who started using it religiously, as I did.
Yeah, but you don't represent most people. So the thing is, like, the hype is like the magnitude and the penetration, the kind of like. The total saturation of the market of that thing, it hypes way higher than it actually is. And so when you have no fundamentals like meme coins, there's more potential upside. However, now even in the meme coin space, right, like people are starting to say, hey, wait, like what's a reasonable time to get out or how high could this really go? So something like Dogecoin's run is an example of where that's like the highest level version of this, where, you know, you get to like
$1 or nothing.
No, you get to like, you know, 100 billion market cap. So is it likely that another meme coin reaches 100 billion market cap that easily? No, because that was like the premier version of that particular bubble. And so it's very hard to recreate that bubble again and again with different coins. And like, especially when attention gets diverted, and its attention's being divided among more projects and whatnot. So you have to say, okay, like, oh, I bought this thing at 1 million market cap. It went to a 10 million market cap and I'm comfortable with that growth, or 100 million. And then, like, as time goes on and more of these things emerge, like the speculative multiplier goes down.
And the fiat continues to get devalued as well.
Yeah, but we're like, you're talking about two very different things. But anyway, try to keep up here. But like, anyway, the point is, like, valuation.
You know what I mean, though? I mean, what your purchasing power decreases.
But nobody's using their purchasing power concerns when they're buying meme coins. You're missing the boat here. Like, nobody gives a shit about any of that stuff when it comes to just sort of like having fun and entertaining themselves. That's what's fun about meme coins, is that like when people buy them, they don't worry about that shit. Like, they don't worry about their purchasing power. They don't worry about, they're just there to be entertained. And if it's fun watching the number go up and, you know, a bunch of people having fun on the internet, that's like the thing. It's like it's a bet on entertainment. Yeah.
That is, 100.
That's kind of disgusting. You think a lot of people are in crypto to be entertained because they don't think they believe in the tech.
Well, coach,
no.
You just got Steffi into conducting a seminar on shitcoins, you know?
That's kind of disgusting to think about. To think about, like, being, almost in the middle of the crowd, in the middle of a crowd with people who don't care about the same things as you. That's kind of gross. It's like being in a ministry or a big evangelical church, and around you are Satanists. Kind of disgusting.
I'm all about the cones, so my life's simple. I see a cone, and I like it. I like the cone.
Anyway, the thing is, like, if you have the knowledge, I think, and that's what Bruce is saying here, like, you can buy these things at prices and things that make sense. And you can understand that those that don't have that knowledge, who don't know why they're buying them and what prices and whatever, the thesis is, like, we're a bunch of crypto dorks here that maybe are more likely to get in early to stuff. And we understand maybe a little bit about why someone might buy that particular coin, or maybe they won't. So we're trying to make a better educated guess on which, let's say, meme coin to pick up or whatever. And I think that's what Bruce has been doing with his, like, sort of vibe strategy, and just looking at kind of,
something like that.
These details, you know, and then you could also use that information too to, like, produce new meme coins potentially. Because if meme coin is a technology, it's a technology about capturing attention. Then it's like, okay, well, how could you make a better one than the previous? It's like building a better mousetrap. And but at the same time, like with meme coins, there's a bit of a randomness to it too, because like virality is not 100% guaranteed on any of these things. So like
you need financial force generally
to some of it. Yeah, you do.
Most of the top meme coins are just cartel things.
Liquidity does matter at the end of the day, and it's important to have enough of it.
So, Bruce, like, the next step, I was thinking about this for the meme coin space, is going to be like VC funded meme coins. Essentially, there's one out right now called, like, is it Bobo or something, like, and people have been posting about how, like, non organic it looks. It looks like it's really been pumped, like,
common.
A lot of money kind of flew into this thing.
A lot of them are this way. Like, a lot, I've seen it behind the scenes. I've seen several chains orchestrate volume manipulation and fake community organically created meme coins in order to drive speculative activity to their chains and attention. I've seen it done.
Yeah.
I've heard it spoken about by the CEO of one of these chains on a call in depth regarding a coin that got relatively popular on one of these new L1s, and talk about how he was like faking it all. I've heard it. Like, firsthand.
No, I mean, it's the ultimate, like, it's the ultimate outcome is to engineer it ultimately. If you know these things can pump for some reason,
it's just a machine, like money input, money output.
Exactly. You're just building a different machine, different mousetrap, and I think that's really what's happening. And as you sort of industrial grade this thing, it starts losing its, like, initial organic fun value in a sense. And so I can see why you picked the ones that you did, because it's like they're not sort of like run by the quote unquote man in a sense. Like, it's like, the more you sort of like industrialize this thing, the less appealing it turns out to be for people, I think.
Well, I mean, maybe not. Maybe the price goes up and people just care anyway. seems to be how it often works.
Yeah,
but I personally don't want to support that kind of stuff.
So it's not that they can't go up. I think it creates a different type of it adds an additional gravity vector to it, right? Like, if you could have the perfect meme coin, is like perfectly organic, perfectly, you know, like it's unfuddable essentially. So each source of FUD that you add is like adding a weight on the scale in terms of what are the odds this thing's going to take off or not. It's not that it's just one thing or the other. You're right. Like, if the number one thing is people want their price to go up, like that's given. Beyond that, it's like, how high could the hype go? It's higher if people believe in their bones that like this is a quote unquote good investment. Like, look at the Caspa situation. So the Caspa people are like, oh yeah, this is like, you know, this guy was in the Bitcoin white paper, blah, blah, blah. You know, these kinds of, you know, and this is the new Bitcoin. This is the new thing. And like, they get like this rabid cult-like following that they really, really believe in this thing to the point where they're willing to put lots of money in. So that ends up resulting in a much higher market cap and kind of upside. If you can achieve, like, if the fundamentals are really strong, that they can, and fundamentally, like, they're unfuddable, each source of FUD adds to one more reason why someone might either not buy the coin or they might buy less of it.
Yeah, but it's a different story, right? I mean, the one thing is basically people want to build something and believe in it. And the other thing is basically they just want to unorganically get traffic to their chain by a meme coin, right? So what Bruce is saying is like, it's
sure.
Bad for your karma if you shill this shit, right?
I think they can still go up. I agree. Like, they'll go up. But what I'm saying is that the potential for how high they go might be actually constrained. That's at least my theory. Because what will happen is on Twitter, like, you'll have people say, oh, this Bobo coin thing, like, or whatever it's called, oh, look at all this evidence that there's, you know, this is going on, that's going on. And then that gets spread around for a while. And then people say, ooh, maybe I'll just exit this thing before these idiots dump on me or whatever. So it creates any negative vibes are just basically feedback for more negative vibes, in a sense. Like, so it's best to have an unfuddable coin in theory, like for a perfect meme coin, I think.
The echo chamber is always prevalent.
Yeah, I mean, you want the echo chamber. That's a plus side for meme coins. What you don't want is things echoing in the echo chamber that are negative.
And, yeah, bingo.
Like, if someone says, oh, the VC pumped the first $1 million into it, and that's why it went from, like, you know, a dollar to, you know, $100 million or whatever, like, then of course, like, or it was an extremely low liquidity thing, or it's just non-organic or whatever. There really is not, like, 100,000 person Discord. There's only 6 people in it, and the rest are bots, for example. Eventually you get to a point where people start sniffing out the negativity, and I think it does tend to translate to human behavior at some level. So like look at the Pepe thing, right? I think like after the thing got, the main developers and stuff like dumped it or whatever, like, and it got crashed. It's more interesting. Or look at Cum Rocket, where, you know, the initial pump and dump is gone, and like the founder, like you said, like burned most of the tokens and pretty much gave it up for dead to some extent. And and the distribution's really good. It's just in a much more organic position now. Like, it's very hard to engineer that kind of organic situation too. Like, you almost have to go through a rise and then death cycle, and then Phoenix rises from the ashes. And that's what people said about, like, you know, early Bitcoin and everything too, is each time it burnt, you know, like, has a hype cycle and everybody sells out, and then you have like each bottom is like this new strong hands, or as they say, and the firm believers in the thing will kind of pick it up again and again and again. And
it's quite beautiful, really.
Yeah, the whole thing is magnificent.
Like, nature is forest fires and ecosystem destruction, and it's just the same again and again.
Yeah, it is really beautiful. Like, it's like that whole cyclicality is just so interesting to watch. Like,
it's also interesting.
You can map that onto like future coins and future events too, to some extent. Like, that's what I've been trying to do, at least when I look at different coins and such.
I had to play around with Solana for the first time, like the last couple of days, last week or so. And one interesting thing there is that the cycles are very condensed. And I think it's because the time duration of cycles is in many ways defined by the opportunity cost holders have, right? So on Solana, meme coins are a fraction of a cent to deploy. There's stuff all the time. Stuff all the time is going from zero to many, many millions of market cap, even higher. Like even like I don't know what the top meme coin is now, but like 100 million market cap or even more. And because of that, people are much more jumpy with their current holdings. Like say they're in a meme coin, they buy early, they write it up, it goes back down, it crashes. Are they going to hold that, or are they sort of like just looking around? Are they looking around for the latest thing? They're much more in that state. And a lot of it is defined by the sheer volume of stuff and the cheapness of stuff being deployed 24/7. And as a result, those cycles, like the seller die-off, the seller exhaustion cycle, gets really condensed. It's quite interesting. I'm seeing it like the Solana is like a sort of a machine that operates about 10 times quicker, not just in like the transaction speed or the cost, but in the actual cycle time as well, which is interesting.
That may have partly a role have to do with also that because right now Solana is a growth asset, there's an opportunity cost from like selling your Solana and buying meme coin and having less Solana because it's going up too. Remember, that was a Luna thing back then too. People would be like, wait, I'm pricing my value and my wealth in this primary asset.
That's what I mean as like part of the opportunity cost, right? It's like, shall I go back to Solana? Oh, fuck, that's going up still. It's like the curve of the upwards price thing, as well as all of the meme coins that are getting launched 24/7 equals like massive opportunity cost combined with lower fees and everything else, like things that make you think twice about ETH.
Which is also incidentally why when Solana crashes, I mean, like it's like 80 to 90% drawdown again is highly likely. It like when it starts going down, it's going to go down big time. It's going to be just this gigantic house of cards again.
Bruce, do you think that it has something to do with the fact that when you watch the Solana chart on these DEX tools or whatever, it's much more reactive because of the TPS, you know, it's just like the chart just jumps a lot more.
I think also there's bots on Solana that people are using those like pump.fun or whatever. I think there are people that are literally buying any random coin that shows up and sort of like that's pumping the price very, very quickly. So it's not just human speculators, but like a DEX tool type bot where it monitors for, you know, new coins popping up and just sort of buys them like even a little bit.
Well, it's a place where third world people can also gamble because everything is a fraction of a cent. Like to ape into a meme coin, to pay for transactions, everything is super cheap. That's like a big part of it. And those people have always had some degree of like willingness to invest social time, right? To shill on Twitter or whatever. But they've been gatekept by the fees and gatekept by the ease of it.
People have argued for a bit like that part of why some of the Ethereum assets have gone up so much is because for that very fact that it's a high cost actually making a transaction, especially during a bull market. And then there's a high track, like a high cost of selling. So therefore, like, you know, you're cautious about even bothering because you're going to lose money just by that transaction.
That's what I mean. Like it's part of the perception of opportunity cost. It's like the stagnancy that fees induces.
Yeah. So it's like, the fees basically make it, you're going to think twice about selling. So therefore the cycle takes longer for the bleed to happen. Whereas on Solana, no one has like any compulsion about it. So it's like just clicking buttons or for that matter, like bots can run much more smoother on a low transaction situation as well. So, and the more bots there are, the more liquidity that happens, but it's also faster cycles, which is either good or bad. Like, you know, if everything just simply pumps and dumps and doesn't go back up again, then like eventually people get bored of that marketplace. Like,
yeah, but it's what I mean is it's like to relate to what we were talking about prior, Cum Rocket might have taken 2 years to bleed out, but then you look at Solana things, you're getting a much more condensed cycle time with time, like cycles of attention and potential for a repump again, a revival again.
And by the way, there's a fuck ton of like meme coins and shit coins on PancakeSwap too. So it's not like it's any less in that sense. So both places have like tons of nonsense. You could like huge numbers of extra coins diverting attention is a thing on both places for sure.
As an outsider, I would just say just keep an eye on the amount of wallets or new users entering the ecosystem. That also matters.
Yeah, Solana's got a lot, like a huge amount of transaction volume over the past few months of both new users and existing users. Yeah, for sure. They've had some really good growth. Anyway, gang, Bruce, I think I'm going to drop off. I need to, like, try to get my sleep back to normal today. Okay. All right, we'll catch everybody later.
Good night, friend.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ants dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss. And I'm liking the odds, fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, yo, the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary fall. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lace, stacked in non-toxic just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like this shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play ring around the rosy while the thunder is served.
Channel Spaces.